Hong Kong. To many of us far away, it sounds like this from CNN.
Protests on a weekly basis and clashes with police. That's become the new reality in Hong Kong.
But there is a lot more to Hong Kong. Say, the music of this local band. It's called David Boring. Our next guest writes about the sounds and the people of Hong Kong, like this band. Journalist Karen Chung is a Hong Kong native and millennial. Her book, The Impossible City, is a memoir about living in and through a tumultuous generation in Hong Kong. From the British handover to China in the 90s, to protests and crackdowns in 2014 and 2019. I spoke to Karen Chung on Skype back in February. Your book is a lot about identity, your own and Hong Kong's identity. Your life overlaps with some of the most defining, perhaps traumatic moments in modern Hong Kong history in 1997, your preschool age when the British handed back over to China. Then there are huge protests, of course, in 2014 and 2019, the latter resulting in crackdowns and losses of political freedoms in Hong Kong now. The question for you is, has that trauma given the people of Hong Kong and you identity of Hong Konger that they didn't really have before, you think?
That's a really great question, because I think for a lot of people, you know, Hong Kong identity is always something that's very difficult to pin down. And I can't necessarily say, you know, the past decade of political change or whatever, you know, has been the reason an identity has formed. But I do think that it is an opportunity for people to find a community, whether it's when you are in the warehouses and going to gigs with your friends, or when you're living through a big historical moment together, like in 2003 when we had SARS. So yeah, that is something that I think has contributed to the formation of the Hong Kong identity. But that is still, you know,
it's still ongoing.
We're still trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, your stories of Hong Kong are intertwined with your own story in this memoir. You write about your father being emotionally abusive. You write about your mother leaving when you were very young. You were primarily raised by your grandmother. How did this upbringing, you think, shape who you became?
I think, you know, as a lot of people who didn't grow up knowing necessarily what home means to them, because, you know, home isn't necessarily a safe place. We tend to really try to figure out, okay, so what does it mean for me to belong somewhere? And a lot of these places around my neighborhood, or the people that I would see at the pier every day, for example, these people really became a sort of second family to me. And I think that really colors the way I look at the city, because there's a lot of discussions now about whether or not people are leaving because of the political situation. And a lot of my friends have left. And that is something that I am trying to interrogate, what it means to want to stay in this place, even though everyone is telling you, you know, that might not be for the best. Yeah, so I think that is a way that my family upbringing has influenced a lot of the material that is in the book, and also my relationship with the city itself.
Well, let me ask you about what it's like now. You mentioned people who are leaving. The political freedoms have significantly eroded the last year or two. What is it like?
I think that's a difficult question to answer, because the lines have been shifting so constantly. I think a very overt influence it had on me and the people around me is that my background is in journalism, and a lot of my friends continue to be reporters today. And over the past year, you know, the space for reporting stories has shrunk a lot. Papers have closed down, and that becomes something that's very difficult for us to navigate. Sometimes we would have conversations about, you know, what can we still write that is quote unquote safe. You know, we don't know what that really means. And if we have something that we want to write, what kind of publication would be willing to run it? And at the same time, I think a lot of us who are still here, our mental health isn't the best. There have been a lot of collective moments of trying to, in a way, grieve together. And holding each other and being like, okay, what are we going to do next? What sort of future do we have left?
Yeah, let me ask you about grieving and mental health, because you write about that throughout your book with your own experiences and challenges. In 2014, there are huge protests in Hong Kong that come to be called the Umbrella Revolution. Here's a bit of a report from NBC's Katie Tour.
Protesters, mostly students, are demanding full democracy.
You were born with democracy choices. You have free election right, but we don't. Please help us.
You write that after 2014 and political rights kind of don't change, universal suffrage, which had been promised, does not seem to be moving toward happening. You write that Hong Kong, or meant for many people in Hong Kong, they went into years of depression. What do you mean?
I think that that shrinking of that space of possibility of what we dreamt could be the future of the city, that was a huge blow to a lot of people. And, you know, as I write in the book as well, the mental health system here isn't really equipped to deal with large amounts of patients. And it became sort of a struggle for a lot of people to figure out where they could air a lot of these thoughts. But at the same time, you know, there's been a lot of positive things as well. A lot of people took that negative energy and they turned it into a lot of wonderful things. So there's been a lot of grassroots movements. There's been a lot of people who decided that they were going to focus on really hyper-local politics on a district level, which is just improving the lives of the neighbors. So that was, I think, generally what the mental health situation was. People were depressed generally, but there were a lot of moments that gave people a lot of hope.
For as far away, Hong Kong is so often defined by the great powers that are moving it one direction or another, because it's a British colony after 1842, right? And then the Japanese occupy Hong Kong, and then it reverts to colonial Britain, and then it becomes part of communist China. But you take us to the people who are being influenced by all these kind of the great power moments. And for you, something that is very personal is music. And one of your groups that you write about is My Little Airport. Tell us briefly what the Hong Kong music scene means to you and defining Hong Kong people.
When I was 18, 19, I started going to these underground music shows in Hong Kong for the first time. And I found out that in all these industrial buildings left over, and there's a lot of them and it's scattered throughout Hong Kong because we used to be an industrial city. And these places and spaces are really where a lot of the underground music movement and also the artists have found a home in. And when I found out that these places existed for the first time, it was like, oh, this is what I'm looking for, because I always thought that Hong Kong didn't have these things. You know, it was just the pop scene. And yeah, for instance, David Boring, I think something about them is they're so angry. And because of that, it's so cathartic to listen to. I remember just so many times where I would just go to a show, and before that, I would be in, you know, maybe a state of brain fog where I couldn't understand really reality around me. And I would just go there and I would feel very alive, and I would feel like I've expelled demons out of my body or something. And I always have that experience whenever I go to their shows. And that's why I really wanted to talk to them for the book, because they've been so important and their music has been so important to me.
Well, finally, Karen, I want to ask you where you and your relationship with Hong Kong goes from here. You write that at some point, if Hong Kong no longer makes sense to you, or maybe the identity is no longer there in a way that you identify with, you would leave. How do you think about that now?
I think staying is maybe not the answer, but I'm not sure moving is either for me, because I can't really imagine what it's like to care about a place that isn't home for me. And I know people move all the time and you find new reasons to make that place feel like it is a part of you. But I think because there's still so many young creatives and artists and musicians here, when I get to see them and hang out with them and experience their art, I feel like there's these moments of transcendence that triumph over the depression. And as long as I think they're still here, I want to be here for as long as I can. And I really don't know what that looks like in terms of time, because things are moving so quickly. But for now, I just can't imagine being anywhere else. You know, I wrote this book because I didn't know what it means to forget a place. And I was so worried that I wouldn't know how to remember the place that I knew anymore. And I hope that even as all these things are happening here, there are going to be a lot of historical documents to archive the way of life that was here for the time that I grew up, and they were the people who made this place so vibrant and alive for me. And I think that can never be touched in a way, even as a lot of things disappear.
Karen Cheung is the author of The Impossible City, a Hong Kong memoir. Karen Cheung, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Scott.